I do have Congressman James Clyburn on the line with us this morning. Congressman Clyburn, did you have too much party last night?
Well, not exactly. I think I had too much leisure time on my hand this morning.
Too much leisure time on your hands?
Right. That's what usually happens when you think you've got more time than you really have. I'm sorry about not calling in earlier, but I was sort of busy trying to prepare to catch a plane in a few minutes.
I understand. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call us. You know, I was trying to think about one of the things we could talk about, and I just wondered, futuristically, are you looking at possibly being a college president or ambassador?
I don't think so. Really gave serious consideration a few years ago to that college presidency bit. But that's an itch that left me some time ago. I'm perfectly pleased to serve out my public service time in the Congress.
In the Congress. So I guess you'll be going for another term?
Yes, I do plan to run for re-election. I have been preparing for that. I'm trying to get all of that out of the way rather soon because I don't know if you know or not, but my memoirs being published by the University of South Carolina will launch on May 5th, and so I'll spend some time trying to prepare for a book tour of that. So I'm really settled in to running for re-election and getting the preliminaries out of the way before I start working on this book tour.
Well, I hope that you'll put Greenwood on your map and maybe come by and sit with us and talk about your book.
Well, I'll be glad to. I do know that that area, Spartanburg, especially so much of the book. I don't know where you're. What your range is, but so much of my book deals with the time I spent in Spartanburg.
In Spartanburg, how about that?
Right.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I'm sure you know Dr. Benjamin Mays.
Oh, knew him very well. In fact, I knew he's from Greenwood County. And Dr. Benny Mays was a very good friend. When I was a student at South Carolina State, one of the requirements for freshmen and sophomores was to remain on the campus during the Easter weekend. And the purpose for that was that every Easter Sunday afternoon, Benny Mays delivered a sermon/lecture at South Carolina State, which was required attendance for those of us who were freshmen and sophomores. So not only did I get to listen to him often, I have engaged in personal conversations with him, and I've read his book, Born to Rebel. It's a great book, and he's one of the people I admire greatly.
Absolutely. Well, then you might not know this, but Friday night they were celebrating 100 years of the Greenwood Chamber, and Dr. Benjamin Mays was they bestowed the honor of distinguished humanitarian on him.
Well, that's very, very well deserved because I do not believe that Martin Luther King Jr. would have become the person that he became were it not for Benny Mays' influence in his life. In fact, he admits that.
Absolutely.
And I worked with people in Greenwood, GLEAMS,
Joe Patton,
the acronym, when we worked hard to get Benny Mays' house. And I, one of the first personal contributions I've made to historic preservation was a check my wife and I wrote to them to help raise money to relocate the house that Benny Mays was born in.
Absolutely.
To where they have put it today, and I was there to speak for it.
Absolutely. Well, then you'll definitely have to come here to Greenwood, make a trip over there, sit down with us here on WCRS and talk about your book, or maybe we could even do it at the library here. That would be awesome.
Well, that's I had not thought about that, but thank you so much for putting that on my mind, because it would be a good thing to do, because a Greenwood native, a former state Supreme Court judge, wrote the opinion in the case of Orr against Clyburn that I talk about, James Moore. I talk about that in the book as well.
How about that? Well, I'll be looking forward to reading your book. So that is awesome.
Thank you.
But let's just talk about a few current things. What do you think about the Keystone Pipeline? Do you think the president, since you're close to him, do you think we might get that Keystone Pipeline coming through?
Yes, I do. I've supported that from day one. And you know, I've been up to Canada, the area where the pipeline will begin.
Right.
And I've studied that issue very carefully. I've been to point zero of the Alaska pipeline to see where it began. So I don't enter into discussions of these kinds of controversial issues without giving significant study to it. So I was not surprised with the State Department's study that reached the conclusion that no significant adverse impact will be realized with the environment. And I was very pleased with that. And I do believe that the Keystone Pipeline will get built. Now, having said that, I don't believe for one moment the Keystone Pipeline will yield the kind of jobs that people, or the number of jobs that people are talking about it yielding. That is just, I think, very, very inflated discussion. But I do think that it is something that ought to be built. It doesn't take away anything to build it.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, through the history of the Congress and the Senate and everything, we have had such good people who were deal makers, who brought things together. And anymore, it doesn't seem that we have those. And, you know, Pete Seeger died last week, and I was thinking about, where have all the deal makers gone, Congressman Clyburn?
Well, a lot of us are still there in the Congress. The problem is that people have allowed sound bites to rule the world, political world, so to speak. For instance, it is ridiculous to feel that there's something wrong with people sitting down around a table making the case as to why a certain effort, like the Keystone Pipeline, for instance, will be good for communities, as I have done with the South Carolina Ports Authority. We got a port down in Georgetown that is sitting there almost idle. We got farmers growing soybeans, sending them out of the country through the Wilmington, North Carolina port, because we have a critical silting problem in Georgetown. If we could go in there and get that cleaned out, then we could be sending these things out of Georgetown, and it would create a great amount of a number of jobs in the economy in Georgetown. Why can't we do it? Because the media sound bites have turned people away from the earmarking process. I can sit down at a table, and I can convince people on the committee why this particular program is good for South Carolina, for my constituents. Now, Georgetown is not in my county,
sure,
or in my district. So, you know, but we've turned people against all of that, and then we wonder why we can't get anything done. Every time you get an earmark, somebody goes, well, let's see, why did they get that earmark? Did anybody contribute to his campaign? and they find somebody that may have written a $100 check, and that becomes a headline. This is just crazy stuff. They're still there. The people just don't do it anymore because a lot of people don't think it's worth the effort.
Well, that's a shame because, truthfully, I didn't realize that Georgetown. Now, I did understand that Charleston has moved way up the list as far as getting that dredged and operational.
Well, let me say that we did not outlaw earmarks. We outlawed congressional earmarks. And the reason that Charleston moved up on the list, and I'm going to say this, and it sounds a little bit selfish, but it's a fact. It happened at a lunch in the president's private dining room right off of the Oval Office. When I said to him and Vice President Biden that I really had to have their help on the Charleston port, that this was important to Boeing, it was important to BMW, it was important to the people of South Carolina, it was important to me and my efforts. And the president looked over at Joe Biden and said, well, if Jim feels that strongly about this, Joe, let's see what we can do to get this done. Now, that is what actually happened. And the president came forward, and he provided the earmark for the South Carolina, the Charleston port that's in that. Now, all this stuff, people running around talking about what they did to do this, that, and the other. The fact of the matter is that's how we got the president to support that port, and I'm very proud of that. But my book sets the record straight on that and a lot of other things as well.
Uh-huh. So we're going to have to read the book. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, it'll give you, a good insight on how critical it is for a state as small as South Carolina to get people, when you get people in place, not to take the ability away from them to help develop the economy. South Carolina has 7 congresspeople. California has 52. Now, just do the math, and you see who's got the most influence. So if you don't build seniority, and if you don't get the ability to do the deal, as you would say, we did so much, Strom Thurmond and Fritz Hollins. These people did so much because they could do the deal, and
right.
They did the deal.
Well, that's what my point is. Right?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. Well, we need more of those deal makers, and of course, this is the direction that we don't seem to have that ability to move forward. But I am very proud that you did get Charleston moved up there. And one of the other questions I wanted to ask you: are there any deals to bring any more businesses? Of course, I know that you were a big part of bringing Boeing here to South Carolina. Any other businesses that may be coming our way?
Well, I don't know. All of that's done out of the governor's office, and unless I hear from the Commerce Department, or from the governor's office soliciting my assistance on something, I would not know.
Oh, okay.
Those kinds of things happen in the Commerce Department. That's the governor's purview. So I have no idea what they may or may not be doing.
You know, education is a great equalizer, and I know you realize that. Oh. How are we going to take and make our schools more equal? You know, there's big talk about the D.C. inner-city schools, and, of course, we have school issues right here in South Carolina. How can we make those more equal?
Well, the first thing we've got to do is stop pretending that we have an equitable system. There is a court case that's been going on now in South Carolina for more than 20 years. The state of South Carolina has refused to equitably fund schools. I remember when I was teaching. I was teaching in Charleston County. There was a school district in Charleston County where expenditures out in the Santee, St. James were $280 per pupil. Expenditures over in St. Andrews were over $900 per pupil. Now, that's remember, this is when I was teaching almost 50 years ago.
Right.
Now, that's the kind of inequity that existed within Charleston County. Because one school district was majority black, the other school district was majority white, that is what we did. And people today still pretend we never did that. We pretend that we didn't put in this dual system where black kids were allowed to go to school only 3 or 4 months out of the year, while white kids went 9 months. So you got this inequitable spending. You don't have time. My father was not allowed to finish high school because in South Carolina they would not provide school for blacks beyond the seventh grade in Kershaw County where he grew up. So and you're going to tell me that's not going to have a long-term consequences. So that's what we've done in South Carolina, and to this day we have refused to dismantle that system. We gloss over it. We pretend it doesn't exist, but the fact of the matter is it still exists. I remember when Charlie Williams, former superintendent of education, he made a public statement to that effect, and they drove him out of the state, unelected him unceremoniously, drove him out of the state. He left here a broken man, went back to his native state of Mississippi, where he finally died, only because he told the truth about what we were doing in South Carolina and what he wanted to do as state superintendent of education to correct that. Now you got a record number of people now running for superintendent of education. I understand there must be about 10 people.
It's a big group, yes, sir.
Somebody want to be superintendent of education. Somebody ought to say, well, what are you going to do about dismantling this dual system that still exists in South Carolina where a poor county like Clarendon and Calhoun, these counties, don't have the expenditures or the ability to bring in good teachers and to educate their folks? What are we going to do at the state level to dismantle that? We aren't going to do it. And so I just think we ought to stop talking about education. And I'll tell you something else that's very egregious about what we've done in South Carolina. In South Carolina, we judge schools and students based upon how well they perform on the SAT. The fact of the matter is, we in South Carolina, historically, we're getting away from it now, but historically, we have required every student to take the SAT. In states, other states, like Iowa being one of them, only the upper 4 or 5% of the students took the SAT. And so if you've got somebody who never go to class, who ain't performing, and that person will not perform on the SAT as well as the people who do go to class. So if you're going to compare South Carolina's SAT scores, where everybody take the SAT, you can be a D student, even an F student, and you're taking it, and you got only A and B students taking it in other states, then which state's going to have the highest average score?
Sure.
Now, that's a fact.
I know that's a fact.
And that's what we've done to South Carolina, and I've said that I think it's intentional. I never believe it, and a lot of people get upset with me for saying it, but I say it because I think it's true.
I thought in the governor's budget she had put an emphasis on education and particularly on some of the poorer counties.
Well, we can put all the emphasis we want, but talk is cheap.
I think she put money with that too, Congressman Clyburn.
She proposed it.
Okay.
Let's see what passes the legislature.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's a good point. That's an excellent point. Should the federal government be involved in this then?
Oh, I think so. But I do know that runs contrary to a lot of people in South Carolina who say that education ought to be a local issue. It should not be a federal issue. Well, if education were not a federal issue, my daddy would never, of course, he never got his college degree because he never was able to graduate from college because he didn't have a high school diploma, though he finished 3 years of college. Well, that is a fact. But for the federal government's intervention, we wouldn't have had the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision. The state of South Carolina did not do that. The United States government did that.
Exactly.
And so there is, to me, a big role for the federal government in education, because if left up to the states, their little nullifications and interposition. And I've seen some of the email traffic floating around South Carolina by legislators right now calling for the state of South Carolina to vote to nullify federal laws. And these are the laws they want to nullify. Well, it ain't going to happen, but that's the mentality that exists in the state of South Carolina in all too many instances today.
Wow. Well, I have one more question to ask you before I let you go here this morning. What is it now? About 2 weeks ago, Senator Tim Scott and the North Carolina comments that came down. What did you think about that attack on Senator Tim Scott?
Well, everybody have their own attitudes about things. I don't, I run my own race. Tim runs his race. He votes the way he thinks he ought to vote. I vote the way I think I ought to vote. And when he was in the House, we canceled each other out quite a bit. So I see the world different from the way Tim Scott sees the world, but I express myself different from the way a lot of other people express themselves. So I don't take responsibility for anybody's expressions. I take responsibility for my own actions.
Okay. So you really don't have anything to say.
Okay.
About that? Is that right?
Well, no. My feelings are one thing, my statements are another. My dad used to tell me all the time when I was growing up, he said, son, anybody that goes around always speaking his or her mind doesn't have good sense.
I learned another one. It was called Think Before You Speak, Ann.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the same thing. Well, Congressman Clyburn, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and I appreciate your insights here. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us here before I let you go?
Oh, I think I've said enough.
I always enjoy talking to you, Congressman Clyburn.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All righty.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.